It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to eighth time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you until 10 o'clock today. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Seth, I was equal parts terrified by Monday Night Football last night and grateful during Monday Night Football last night.
What were you grateful about?
I'm grateful about it. Really, I was grateful as I was watching the Tampa Bay Buccaneers get completely decimated by injuries throughout the night.
Yeah.
That while the Texans have had their own share of injuries, that they're still finding ways to over. They're still 5-2. Nico Collins is going to come back. The defense was banged up last week and had a really good game, in my opinion, against a very good offense in Green Bay. Like, I think there is something, offensive line notwithstanding, I think there is a moxie about this Texans team that takes on adversity maybe better than some other teams do. The Buccaneers lost Mike Evans last night, literally on a throw to the end zone. It was like the Nico Collins play on steroids. It was a deep pass.
Yeah.
And unlike Nico, who caught the ball and went in for a touchdown, Mike Evans dropped the ball. Unlike Nico, who didn't really grab at his hamstring, we all watched him go into the blue tent and go, I wonder why he's going there. Mike Evans was literally grabbing his hamstring as he fell to the ground on that play.
Yeah.
And unlike the Texans, who went on to win that game against Buffalo, the Buccaneers went on to get outscored by 41 unanswered points after going up 10-0 in that game.
The tough thing about the Ravens is you want to lean on historical precedent and be like, well, we've seen the Ravens be damn near unstoppable looking in the regular season many times before.
Yeah.
We personally have seen them look unstoppable in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, very recently.
What you have to hope is that somehow there's still that little Zay Flowers dynamic where, all right, in a big moment in the playoffs or what have you, maybe they just don't have it.
Yeah, maybe.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, that's the part that terrifies me, the Ravens. So the part that was grateful, the part that the original question was what had me grateful, that the Buccaneers look like a team that if they get punched in the face, they're not really punching back. The fairy tale, losing, and they lose Chris Godwin on a broken ankle or a dislocated ankle. Literally with 43 seconds left in a game where they've just been getting garbage yards after garbage yards, they're driving for a touchdown that's going to maybe get them an onside kick, and they've already lost Mike Evans. And even things like my daily listen in on Cleveland this morning, where the news for them is the news for them was they're still hashing out the fan treatment of Deshaun Watson, and literally in the middle of the opening segment of the morning show there, the news came down that they were signing Bailey Zappe to back up Jameis Winston this weekend.
Oh, good, good.
You know what I mean?
So things are on track there, right?
You know what I mean? So as we sit here and look at our Chardonnay offensive line, which is really the only part of this team right now that I've got a major issue with. Everything else, I'm good with the Texans, including the coaching staff, which I know D'Amico is catching more strays this week than he has as a head coach. I think he even kind of admitted that. He mentioned the criticism at the end of the press conference.
In a fun way.
Said,
hey, you guys are going to,
in a fun way. I think D'Amico's handling it great. We're going to go in again today because he answered some questions we didn't have answers to on Sunday, so we've got to hit some of that. But life is pretty good here right now, is my point. Until you watch Derrick Henry run.
No, there's just such a clear distinction between the really genuinely elite and better teams in the NFL right now than the Texans. And it's easy to say, well, it's just one position group. And then you remember, oh, yeah, that one position group, the offensive line, is damn near 50% of your entire offense. Right. The offensive lineman, as disadvantaged as they may be genetically in life, mm-hmm. tend to be fat, ugly, uninteresting people for the most part. But they do comprise 5/11 of your entire starting offense.
Right, right.
That's all. It's kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And when you watch a team like the Ravens, you're like, ooh, look at how physically nasty they are. Wow, look at them attacking. Ooh. You get the sense that they probably... Tell you what, Sean, it's probably pretty pathetic how few their Instagram following numbers are.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah, they probably do not do nearly as well on Instagram as our Instagram OTs.
Right. Yeah, Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard scoff at Tyler Lindenbaum's IG following, for sure.
Titus Howard got an owie on his thumb in one place, so just stopped blocking.
Hold on.
You got to keep those thumbs in shape for your Instagramming.
Hold on for a second. Like, to the point where it sounds like you rewatched the game.
Yeah, I got to go back and watch this rep again because I had it earmarked. But
All-22, like him.
It's one of my seven notebooks that I've got laying around. But yeah. I'll send it to you in a little bit.
Oh my God. Hey, I was thinking about this last night as Derrick Henry was running for, let me find it here. He made me a lot of money on Prize Picks last night. 169 yards on 15 carries. He had 23 yards at halftime. I know this because I needed him to get more than 86.5 yards. So I was like, I was at Legacy Cigars and Lounge last night. We were watching it. Reggie was out there. Some listeners were out there. We had a good time. And I'm like, man, he's only got 20. This is all I need. I needed a Mike Evans touchdown. I needed Derrick Henry to go off. And then he does what Derrick Henry does, which is get handed the ball, get up ahead of steam, and go down the sidelines for 81 yards. He got caught before he got in the end zone. This is what I was wondering, Seth, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, especially your thoughts on this, because you wanted Derrick Henry for the Texans very badly, probably as badly as anybody in the city. You were on the Derrick Henry train, and he's looked...
Very unpopular take at the time.
He's looked phenomenal. Yeah, because everybody wanted Saquon Barkley, and you didn't want Saquon. Now, Saquon's had a good year, too. All these guys, like these running backs who their current teams last year didn't want them anymore.
Yeah.
That is a very underplayed story right now. Henry, Barkley, Mixon, Josh Jacobs, all having very, very, very good years for the teams that signed them. Here's my question.
Okay.
Would Derrick Henry, how would it have looked Derrick Henry running behind this offensive line? And the reason I ask is that Joe Mixon seems to run behind this line very well, and I think a lot of it is he's got a suddenness about him at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry needs to get up ahead of steam to do his thing. How do you think it would have looked behind this line?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be nearly like what this is, what he's doing in Baltimore.
Would it have been better than Mixon is my question.
No, I don't think so. I mean, other than the health, I guess that's the biggest thing is the health. You know where I am also with running backs. I'm in a weird spot where I almost like a guy who's 30 or 31 and has stayed really healthy than a guy who's 25 or 26 and has stayed really healthy.
Yes.
And Mixon's 27 or 28 right now.
He's in that range right there.
Yeah, so like he hadn't gotten past that hurdle to where I feel like, oh, you're a genuinely durable running back in the NFL.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, Derrick Henry's a guy that you want to be able to give him a little bit of a runway. And there has not been a runway for running backs here with the Texans. A lot of times it's Joe Mixon doing a really good job, dodging flack in the backfield and then getting going. There were some really nice instances of run blocking in the game the other day. It wasn't as consistent as it needs to be.
Yeah.
But I think Joe Mixon, if you're gonna sign a running back based on how decrepit you think your offensive line might be, it's probably better to go with Joe Mixon than Derrick Henry. Now, if you think you actually have a well-coached offensive line that actually gives a damn about toughness and things like that, then by all means, get yourself a Derrick Henry.
Right.
On that 80-plus yard touchdown run he had, he got up to the fifth highest speed of any ball carrier this season.
He did? Okay, because he didn't score. Someone caught him.
The 80-plus yard run. He got up to the fastest that he's been
fast.
All season.
Yeah.
The fifth fastest all season of any ball carrier.
He looks good, man. He looks better now than he did against the Texans at the end of last year, that's for sure. Derrick Henry. So
yeah, I think that's a, well, we were a little bit, and this is why my take was so unpopular. The Texans, the two games versus the Texans were his two worst games, and so people that had watched Derrick Henry were like, oh, all right, it's everything, like he's the worst version of himself. Yeah, he's getting, if he gets disrupted in the backfield, he's worthless. The Texans completely crushed him. That was as much about Will Levis as it was about Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
That the Texans could sell out because Will Levis had no ability to really take advantage of the over-aggressiveness of the Texans' defense.
The Texans play the Ravens team we saw last night in 10 weeks. They play them in Christmas Day. They play them week 17, so early in week 17. They play them in about, you know, a couple of months. Are you nervous? Are you as terrified as I am of what I saw last night?
No, because it's still, it feels like way far off. Mm-hmm. Although I was writing a check yesterday. Don't ask why. But I was writing an actual physical check. And I was kind of shocked when I put the date on it.
I thought it
was like October 20th or something. I just guessed October 20th, and I went for it, and I put it on the check.
Yeah.
It's time she's a moving, isn't she?
Is she? Well, it's week 8 already, man. Like, this is, we're damn near the halfway point of the season. I wanted 6-2 before the season started in the first 8 games. And I guess it's like, okay, is this going to be a 6-2? Like, now I'm getting a little nuanced with it. Like, I know before the season, I'm like, I think they can go 6-2. This is the soft part of their schedule. And if they go 6-2, man, I'm going to feel good. And I just wonder, after this game on Sunday against the Colts, am I going to be that guy where they're 6-2, but I'm like,
They're 5-2, and, you know, D'Amico said something on in the post game, or on Monday maybe, I don't know which part it was, but he's talking about how, hey, if the Texans come down with one of those potential interceptions on that final drive, you know, we're having a different discussion today. I don't know if we would be, actually. I mean, we've been saying this about this team all season long. There's certain things you cannot ignore in victory. And we've seen that. Like, there's just certain things where you can see, all right, they have to improve on this. They, on paper, have the potential to improve on it. But right now, they're really a 500 football team. Yeah. That's how I look at them. They're a 500 football team that won some squeakers that maybe shouldn't have been squeakers. But the offense is a, they're a middling offense,
average
scoring wise, and like, to take any statistic you want, and you can look at it and say, all right, this is a middling offense.
Yep.
And does the return of Nico Collins, you know, make that big of a difference? And having Joe Mixon and Nico Collins on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
We won't know for a couple weeks, hopefully.
Yeah. The biggest concern, we'll talk about it more in the next segment. Like, all the yeah buts in the first part of the season, where we were nitpicking the wins, were all things that were largely dumb. Like penalties, they're giving up big plays. What are you doing? They're not, you know, the safety's not rotating over the top, all that stuff. The offensive line is something that could get C.J. Stroud hurt, and that's why this is a legitimate concern to me.
The offensive line
isn't just kids being kids, you know what I mean?
Everything orbits around the offensive line right now in terms of the tight ends not being involved in the passing game. A lot of that has to do with the fact that they're being used in pass protection so much. It's an ugly situation. Yep. The offensive line is the limiting factor. It's a big, gigantic, irregularly shaped mole on the cheek of the Texans' offense.
On the cheek of an otherwise super hot model.
She's like a 10.
Yeah.
And you're like, but she's got a mole. Is it like Cindy Crawford's? Oh, God, no.
It's like a separate creature living on their face. It's got its own zip code. Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Seth and I get to dig into some more things today. Pettycast at 8 o'clock is going to be really good.
Oh, yes.
It's a good Pettycast. We got Ross Tucker.
Favorite time of the year.
We got Ross Tucker at the top of the hour. Watching D'Amico Ryan's press conference yesterday, I felt like this is the first time that D'Amico is getting hit with like real head coaching questions yesterday about decisions, about personnel. Let's see how he did. We have his answers for you coming up next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more rips.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, I felt like yesterday, this is like the first time in D'Amico Ryan's coaching career here that he's getting hit with the hit and re-hit with some of the strategic in-game stuff, you know, along with just this offensive line is a major, major sore on this team right now where you've got to start to ask questions about, hey, man, what are we doing here? Like, are we going to make some changes? Are we going to, you know, personnel, staff? What are we doing? So he was asked about stuff yesterday. Let's start with the in-game decision-making. He did not get asked about this after the game on Sunday, which I thought was a little strange. But a big play in this game on Sunday was the lateral that was called an incomplete pass in the first half where... The referee called an incomplete pass. Jordan Love was lateraling it, I believe, to Reed. And he dropped it, went on the ground. Foley Fatakasi falls on it, but it was called an incomplete pass. Challengeable because it was a clear recovery by the Texans. They didn't challenge it. I think they would have had a decent chance at winning it, as did Gene Steratore, the rules expert on the broadcast. He thought they would have had a decent chance of winning that. That would have been a huge play. You're changing possession. Made even huger by the fact that the very next play, the Packers score a long touchdown to Wicks to go up 14-10. And it was a play where D'Amico was going nuts on the sideline about something, whether it was personnel they had on the field, something.
Yeah, yeah. I think that part of it, I'm pretty sure, was about the defense.
Yeah.
They looked like they were a little out of joint.
Yeah, because if you want to challenge it, he would just throw in his red flag. You know, So he was asked about it yesterday, thankfully. And did you consider challenging that play?
Yeah, from the guys upstairs, it wasn't, and they thought it was forward. So, I mean, looking back at it, yeah, should I have challenged it? Yes, it's always, you know, you look back, hindsight is always 20/20. So you're looking back, like, should I throw the challenge? You know, maybe throw it there. So I look at myself, too, like, wish I would have thrown it there just to force them to make a decision.
Yeah, so that was a failure from the guys upstairs. That should have been challenged.
Well, you know what, though? I always hesitate to say it's a failure from the guys upstairs because the craziest thing, unless they've changed this in the last year or two and I didn't know it, the coaches don't have access to anything other than the television.
Right.
So like they are, that's why I get so CBS sucks with their replays. They don't show replays quickly enough.
Yeah.
I think by the time that they had the rules analyst on there explaining it and showing that angle, it might have been too late already.
Maybe.
Or the timing of it. So that's the, like, yeah, there's no DVR up there or anything. So I think that's, it's forgivable given the way that the stupid way that the NFL does the replay stuff.
Yeah, well, and I guess what, you know, my tolerance for risk might be different than the Texans' tolerance for risk. Like, my feeling on replay is that I think there are good replay challenges where you only have maybe a 30% chance of winning it. If the upside is you're getting possession of the football, like, if you have a 30% chance of winning, like, a spot that makes it second and nine instead of second and instead of second and 11 or something silly like that, where the payoff is not very good, or it's an 8-yard completion, guy got his feet in, it was called incomplete, then it's silly to challenge something like that. Something where you get possession of the football in your own territory is huge. I would have thrown the challenge flag on that just based on the possibility of winning it there. But the Texans may have a different philosophy than that, so I'm willing to listen to that. D'Amico wishes he threw it, obviously, there.
Yeah, I guess the big thing on that one was on the TV copy, I thought it was less convincing than the replay. And especially given the, I mean, the two big man what if moments in that game were Neville Hewitt and that illegal tackle, the unsportsmanlike that extended that drive.
Yep.
It just seems like it. It's hard because you love the way Neville Hewitt's been playing in relief and everything about
that was a dumb
his appetite
play.
For violence. Yeah. But yeah, that was a dumb play.
Yep.
And then that, you could just, two little things that aren't necessarily, don't have anything to do with the actual play on the field, but that you could have just changed those two little things and
might be
there
a different
you go.
Game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Might
yeah.
be a different game. He was also asked, D'Amico was, as he was in the post game. This Landry asked him about this and hit him with a good follow up question too, I thought. The last play the Texans ran from scrimmage in that game before the go-ahead field goal was the 3rd and 15 with 1:50 to go about, with Green Bay having one timeout left. You'd like on that play to at least keep the clock moving so Green Bay's got to use their last timeout so they'll go into their final drive with no timeouts left. The Texans ran just, I thought, was a silly play there. A sideline route to Tank Dell that was incomplete. So the clock stops. Even if Tank had caught it, the clock would have stopped because Tank would have been sliding out of bounds untouched if he had caught the football about 7 yards short of the sticks. It was just, it was not a smart play there. D'Amico was asked about that.
Yeah, we had a one-on-one opportunity right there. We had to win that one-on-one opportunity, which, you know, we put Tank and CJ in that spot to win a one-on-one opportunity, and we didn't make the play, didn't get it done. The goal is to complete the pass. The goal is to complete the pass.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like Landry hit him with some follow-ups there. Like, yeah, but you were short of the sticks. The goal is to complete the pass. That was not nearly as good an answer as the one about I should have challenged the lateral play.
No, and honestly, the part that I'm still perplexed by is CJ, and it didn't really fall. The significance of this didn't really hit me until after the show yesterday, even though I'd listened to the clip a couple times.
Yeah.
Like, CJ was uninformed and unaware of what the strategy was there. And
going into the drive, it sounds.
Yeah, and say he tries to talk to D'Amico, but there's not a lot of time. And
a 2-minute warning to talk about it.
Yeah, like, so what? At some point, I feel like on that third down, your quarterback, it's almost disrespectful to CJ that you haven't told him at some point, like, listen, it's either a touchdown or pull the ball down and run it. It just keep the clock rolling as much as you can.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was one-on-one. And I guess the option would have been, okay, if the coverage had been a little bit different, maybe you would have extended that to a fade or something, which doesn't really do you a lot of favors either in terms of if he runs a corner out to the end zone in terms of time management.
The only acceptable throw that stops the clock is a throw into the end zone. That's the only acceptable
one. Or something easy, you know, a screen or something that's easy in the middle of the field.
I'm saying a throw that stops the clock, you know. Like
a throw that
stops the clock. Like, if they had thrown into the end zone and Green Bay doesn't use their last time out, I would have said, okay, that makes sense, though. You're trying to take more than a one-point lead or a two-point lead in the game, whatever it was at the time.
Ultimately, you know, maybe it doesn't matter anyway, but, I mean, you get... you get a few less plays for the offense to operate. They started operating a little bit differently, a little bit more desperately out of the gun on that last drive.
Yeah.
And, but more than, and, but regardless of what would have happened afterwards, it seemed like the strategy was, all right, we're going to run. Then we're going to run on set. It's one thing to run on first down. I know everybody's got complicated feelings about that. But at the very least, Joe Mixon had had some success running the ball in that game.
Yep.
You run on first down. Okay, into a loaded box. Okay, but now it's second and long. Clearly, your strategy here is to burn clock because you run again on second down, take another loss.
Yep,
and then all of a sudden you just pivot into we're gonna try to get closer to a field goal than on a play that's gonna go out of bounds and not chew up clock. Like, what are we even doing here
on a 35-yard field goal? Like, you've got a guy that's kicking 55-yarders on the regular all year. Like,
look, I'm not a mathematician or a statistician, but I feel like the difference in probability from the 35-yard field goal to the shorter field goal compared to taking a timeout away from the opponent.
Yeah.
If you've already been playing clock chewing strategy. Yep. It's the pivot that annoys me more than anything.
No doubt. And it's disconcerting that it feels like we don't know the whole story. You know, it feels like there is something about that last drive against Green Bay that was amiss. And it's either CJ wasn't as informed as he should have been as to what the goal was. That quite honestly, Seth, that answer that D'Amico gave about the 3rd and 15, he might have been protecting a CJ brain fart at that point. CJ drops back, tanks open. He's been sacked and hit a jillion times that day. I'm going to get rid of it here. So there's that possibility. We just don't know, but we know this. We know it did not end in the most optimal way. It ended with a field goal, which is great. But there were silly things going on at the end.
It was unknown. And it's the CJ not being aware of what the strategy was. No conversation with him being had about it. Like, what's your decision making in that moment?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's a good point. Maybe CJ did just, except the way he answered afterwards, it didn't look like he was trying to blame anybody or anything. He was giving an honest question.
Yeah.
An honest answer about how it was going on. It speaks to a lot of, I think, what we've seen. And what I was nervous about during training camp was when you start hearing people talk a lot about, like, yeah, well, last year we got the basics down, but now we're at that 300 level of, you know, trying to do stuff that's more elevated. Yeah, but you know what? And this, and man, in professional sports, it's same as in high school sports, you can never, ever, ever forget get the basics and getting the basics right. And there's some of the basics with the offense right now that they're just flat out not doing well.
Yep.
On the offensive line and with the offense in general, the communication is bogus pre-snap.
Yeah.
There's times where Juice Scruggs is still struggling to identify and make calls, like, right up to the snap.
Yeah.
And the guys, it's clear at times, that not everybody on the offensive line and in the backfield is on the same page as to even what type of protection they're supposed to be running. There's times where the offensive tackle and the running back are trying to block the same guy where one of those guys screwed up. And it's impossible without knowing the rules in any given situation versus looks exact. But the miscommunication is clear. And that's like, okay, You're out there trying to do calculus when you don't know your 2 + 2s.
Arithmetic, yeah. D'Amico was asked yesterday, so we did the in-game decision-making. Thought he answered the lateral play well. The 3rd and 15, I'm just never going to get to where D'Amico was on that. We had a one-on-one matchup, okay. Staff and personnel questions. Here was D'Amico saying everything on the table right now.
We have a lot of things to clean up when it comes to, you know, our protection, and it's everyone involved, right? O-line, tight ends, backs, is everybody working together, being on the same page, and just getting it done. Like, we've had multiple weeks where the same things have hurt us multiple times, so we have to get it fixed, starting with the coaches and down to the players of finishing and executing it. Yeah, for me, everything is on the table. When it comes to it, has to get fixed. When it comes to it, I know how we're coached, what we're asking to be done, and it's not showing up on the tape. So it's not just one person; it's the entire thing. So it's just the entire offense from the top to the bottom. We have to get it cleaned up. Not one person or one thing, but multiple things, multiple issues that we have to get collectively. We have to get it fixed.
Okay,
I'm interested in when we talk to Ross Tucker in 27 minutes. A listener asked a question yesterday, which I thought was a good question. What's the likelihood? Like, how reasonable is it to expect a position group to improve during a season?
Good question.
And I think on the offensive line, that might be the position group where there's the most chance for improvement at any given point in the year, because it's so technical and there's just so much that you can do and fix in terms of technique and communication and all of that. And yet, that only works if you've got a really good coach. So yeah. I gotta go check the timelines and see if, I believe Ross Tucker played for Dante Scarnecchia.
Yeah, I was thinking about Dante Scarnecchia yesterday. Yeah. I'm like, what's he up to these days?
One of the best offensive line coaches in this century and for the Patriots forever. They brought him out of retirement once to try to fix the issues they were having.
Yeah, I was watching some of the Belichick clips on the McAfee show yesterday, and I'm like, huh. Yeah. What's Scarnecchia up to these days?
I wonder if... You think Belichick would want to come be an offensive line coach?
No.
That'd be awesome.
If he didn't have that little hot girlfriend there, he might. You know, but he's got a lot on his hands right now, man.
Do you remember when Paul Pasqualoni was... what was he coaching?
He was the D-line coach.
Oh, that's right, the D-line coach. It was so weird.
Yeah.
It was so weird seeing Pasqualoni out there as a defense... Yeah, I know, here. I just couldn't remember which group. It's strange when somebody that's so ingrained in your brain as a head coach is out there doing something like that.
Yeah.
The Belichick, a little bit different reputation than Pasqualoni.
A little bit. I also think, too, with the offensive line, as you were laying out, like maybe the upside of, you know, it's technical stuff, so it's fixable. I also think, as we get names texted to us here of who the Texans should go after with other teams, someone saying trade for Joel Bitonio. Yeah, he'd be a clear upgrade over Kenyon Green. I also think the offensive line is the hardest position to import improvement on as well. Like, I think these are the guys. Yeah. The guys that are in that. And maybe not these five. Maybe they replace Kenyon Green with Kendrick Green or Jarrett Patterson. But that position group is the one that's the hardest to go, like, oh, we'll just go get this guy at the trade deadline, that kind of thing.
You know? I think the tough thing, though, too, is going back to the potentially systemic issues, the miscommunications, all of that. Another part of it, I think, is simply, as various people mentioned yesterday, the D'Amico and one of the other players talked about this, just actually getting up to the line and, you know, getting the call in earlier, getting guys time to process things up on the offensive line, all of that. That goes back to Bobby Slowick as well.
Yep.
The whole operation, you know, that old, remember that old Far Side cartoon of the kid trying to enter the school for gifted children, and he's pushing on the door that says pull.
Yeah.
Like that's what the offense feels like right now. They're trying to be super nerds, and yet they're screwing up the really simple and stupid stuff.
It's a good analogy.
And a lot of that comes back to coaching. It's Bobby Slowick, it's Chris Strausser, and you've got guys underperforming on the offensive line that you're locked into expensive contracts.
Yeah, no, we'll talk about that later in the show. Like how fixable is this via change of personnel? I don't think it is, at least not this season.
Yeah, no, so my point being, even if you bring in a Joel Bitonio or something like that, he can only go as far as the group can go with
they
have.
Yeah. It's a different position group. All right, headlines coming up next. Hey, we got to get to the Rockets. They made some moves yesterday. We'll get to them. Monday Night Football last night. Big injuries going on in the NFL right now. My God. We'll get to that as well. That's all coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, headlines. Let's get to it. Texans yesterday. D'Amico Ryans met with the media. Coming off that loss to Green Bay, we got Indy coming to town. How long does a loss like that to Green Bay linger, Coach?
No, great question. I'm done with the game. I just have to come in here and answer all the questions. I'm done with it, and I've moved on. Just give you guys, after you guys watched the film and got all the criticism, bring it on. But it's good. I'm on to the net. All I'm thinking about is the Colts.
There you go. So D'Amico Ryans, I think he's got a great demeanor for being a head coach. You know, the one thing, Seth, with this, with the whole moving on thing that just doesn't jibe with the media schedule during the week, Bobby Slowick still needs to be asked a bunch of questions about this Green Bay game. And they don't meet with the media till Thursday.
I feel like that's always it's always nice for those guys to be able to get they've got some lead time to know how to answer the hard questions. They can probably mull it over and everything. Maybe as a service to the team, we should have the coordinators on Tuesday instead, Monday or Tuesday, because that way they can move on too, instead of having it hanging over their heads about how they're going to answer the questions about the stupid things they did.
That's actually a really good idea, doing that instead, doing it on Tuesday instead of Thursday. That's a good idea.
I remember the one I went back and watched after the Texans had hired D'Amico Ryans. The worst performance they had as a defense with the 49ers that year, one of the worst ones, was versus the Kansas City Chiefs. And it was probably the toughest press conference D'Amico had to do as a defensive coordinator, because the playoff losses are didn't have to do the press conference after that.
Yeah.
I think that he did a good job answering those tough questions. I think and yesterday he had some tough questions that I thought he accepted responsibility for a couple of them, gave kind of curious answer about the final pass there to Tank Dell.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Slowik is as embattled as I would could possibly imagine him being on a team that's 5-2 right now.
Yeah.
They're, like, this offense is holding them back.
Yes.
Like, they're not living up to expectations with or without Nico Collins. They're doing a lot of stuff that does not look good. A lot of the decisions he's making and the way they operate, again, kind of is a reminder of last year when they kept hanging on to Damian Pierce for way too long.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he doesn't know his own personnel.
Yeah.
I feel like he doesn't. They line up in these condensed formations when you got all the wide receivers down next to the tight ends and the tight ends down next to the offensive tackles that work really well if you've got guys who are physical mashers. None of those guys are.
No.
And Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs, they try to block their butts off, but they're little guys.
Yeah.
And there's times where even on the blitzes, those corner blitzes and everything are a lot easier for the defense when Tank Dell lines up next to the tight end and he's right there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense to me because they can't run the ball like old school football players.
Nope.
They're not built that way. This offensive line, they are not those guys.
Mm-mm.
They're not tough badasses at all. Like, the offensive line just disgusts me.
Yep.
The whole way they operate, the whole way they go about things. CJ's getting roughed up by the entire Green Bay Packers defense or sideline, and nobody's anywhere to be seen. They're not built the right way. They are at their core not the right kinds of guys.
Yes.
I feel like it's infected Shaq Mason. Shaq Mason you sent Shaq Mason from the iron forge to go work at a fancy consulting firm
at a Baskin Robbins store.
Be nice to the customers, Shaq. But I want to punch them.
Right.
No, you have to be nice, and the customer's always right.
You're not going to get your free ice cream if you punch customers, Shaq.
When you see him pulling and it kind of works, like I can't think on my head. I don't think I could count five times where a pulling offensive lineman for the Texans actually buried and destroyed somebody.
Yeah.
It's usually more of like, oh, hey, let's exchange recipes. Here, I'm going to stand in front of you. Promise not to tackle. Hey, you.
I thought
you weren't going to go that hard on this play.
We were watching Monday Night Football last night at Legacy Cigars, and some listeners were there. And the big thing, the offensive line was a big topic, as you can imagine there. And the one thing that getting brought up was that Laramie Tunsil wears skinny jeans. It must have been four guys brought it up to me. Like, man, he's wearing these skinny jeans out here. I don't want my lineman wearing skinny jeans. And he doesn't even look that good in them either.
It's as bad as when the Texans linebackers were into cosplay.
Yes.
When they would show up at games.
Yes.
The team is underperforming, and meanwhile you got guys showing up dressed up like Harry Potter characters.
Dodgeball.
Good for you guys.
All right, let's get to the Rockets. They were busy yesterday. The NBA season starts tonight. Yesterday was the deadline if you want to extend some of the 2021 draftees. So if you had your social media timeline open and you're following anything basketball, there are all sorts of names flying around who are all making 30, 40, 50 million dollars a year, where if you're like me, you're going, that guy makes $30 million a year. Jalen Green's one of them. 3 years, $105 million. Jalen Green signs with the Rockets, signs an extension. Alperen Şengün, 5 years, $185 million. Each of these deals has a player option for the final year. So I guess the strategy with Jalen Green is he's going to hit free agency again a little bit earlier. The money's so crazy now, Seth, and every team seems to operate over the cap because of the Larry Bird clause where you can sign your own guys to whatever. The general consensus from people whose opinions I respect that are way more into the NBA collective bargaining agreement than I am is that the Rockets did well with these deals. They're both below the max. You'd seen a lot of teams just automatically giving max contracts to guys who aren't as good as Şengün and Green on teams that are way worse than the Rockets right now. So these are considered to be very good deals for the Rockets that allow them some flexibility moving forward. But, you know, you got that whole big young core of six, now seven guys when you add Reed Shepard in that they've drafted in the first round. And the Rockets' message here is that they feel like on the first two, which were these two guys, they feel like they've hit on those two guys right now.
Yeah, and I think Udoka being a genuine NBA coach and being a guy that can, I think they have faith and trust that he can work his way through any different chemistry or skill set mismatches. The whole debate between, you know, whether it's Green or whether it's Şengün looks silly in hindsight.
Can be both.
And the price tag hasn't really affected me ever since the Ryan Anderson signing. going back to it was Ryan Anderson they signed in the year that the cap went up, right?
Yes, yeah. Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, and Ryan Anderson got 4 years, $80 million.
Yeah, that was when you first realized.
That was eight years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So if Ryan Anderson's making $20 million a year, it's like, because that was one of the weirder Rocket signings, because they just, it felt like it was just on Daryl Morey's bucket list.
Yeah.
He'd been trying to get Ryan Anderson for years, so he was going to be willing to pay anything and everything to finally catch
him. He liked that shooting, man. Ryan Anderson could shoot. He liked that shooting. Yeah, that's like a smoke him if you got him year. You're like, oh, we got all this cap space, you know?
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Chris Paul. It was Chris Paul's fault.
No, Chris got here after that. He was after that.
No, but he was the NFLPA president.
The NBA. Yeah,
they had the option of like ramping up.
Yeah.
So basically, Chris Paul delivered the.
No smoothing.
Delivered Kevin Durant to the. To the Warriors,
right.
And yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
And gave us Ryan Anderson. Thanks a lot, Chris Paul.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, thanks a lot, Chris Paul.
Did I say NFLPA president?
You did.
I meant NBA Players Association president.
Yep. Brandon Ayuk out for the season for the Niners. Boy, that holdout was really worth it. Because that whole saga carried us for like a month. Not didn't carry us. I mean, we're in Houston, they're in San Francisco. But it dragged out for a long, 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 long time. What a popcorn fart that wound up. He wasn't even good when he was on the field this year so far.
I'm not going to back this up with statistics or facts or anything, but I'm sure they're out there. But there is just something about when a guy holds out and then gets injured.
Yeah.
It just, every old school sentiment in you is screaming from within. Like, that's what you get.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a correlation or not, but that's the way it feels, damn it.
For sure. Your ACL.
Especially with Ayuk. Ayuk held them, just through every obstacle in the 49ers' way in terms of dealing him or anything else. Like, he made it dramatic as hell, and now this is what you have. And he's still getting paid.
He's still obviously. Getting paid, yeah. Monday Night Football, Baltimore beats Tampa Bay 41-31. Arizona, last-second field goal. They beat the Chargers 17-15. Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL insider, he is going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on the Texans' offensive line issues, which are major right now. Ross Tucker, obviously, a former offensive lineman. We will talk to him, get his thoughts on that. He's our Odyssey NFL insider. We'll do that next. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.